March 3rd, 2013, in Johannesburg, South Africa radio show.
You can go to production. I'll be. Hare Krishna and welcome to the Hare Krishna Hour. This is your weekend 1 hour of Krishna Conscious Radio, brought to you every Sunday mornings between 8 and 9 a.m. exclusively on 93.6 Lens FM. I'm Atreya Rishi Das and I'll be your host for the next hour. Coming up on our show this morning, we have our regular Bhagavad Gita class by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, our Back to Godhead moment by Vishal Prabhu, and a little talk on Kirtan by Pooja Morali. Most importantly this morning, we have been especially blessed to have, as our special guest, a direct disciple of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, a very senior devotee and great Vaishnavi in our ISKCON movement from New York in the United States of America, Her Grace Srimati Urmila Devi Dasi. Hare Krishna Mataji, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada and welcome to the Hare Krishna Hour.
Hare Krishna Trevi Shibu, nice to be here. Thank you.
Mataji, we are most humbled and pleased to have you as our special guest this morning. Thank you very much for accepting our invitation.
My pleasure.
If you just joined us, you're listening to the Hare Krishna Hour on 93.6 Lens FM. Is a direct disciple of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. She has come to South Africa for the first time, and by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, she has graced us with this visit to Indonesia. And to read to us a little bit about the history of Mataji is Pooja Morali. Hare Krishna, Pooja.
Hare Krishna. Born in 1955 in New York City, Urmila Devi Dasi joined ISKCON in 1973 in Chicago while a student at Bennington College. In secondary school, she was state and district champion in extemporaneous speaking, going to the quarterfinals in the national tournament. Urmila Devi Dasi received first initiation by mail in 1973, thus becoming a disciple of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the founder of the Hare Krishna movement. Her Grace first saw Srila Prabhupada in the summer of 1974 and had several opportunities, along with her family, to meet with him personally. She received second initiation in Philadelphia in 1975. Urmila Devi Dasi has served in ISKCON continuously since 1973. Her Grace has a Bachelor's of Science from Excelsior College in Religion and Education. From the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, Her Grace holds a Master of School Administration and Doctor of Education in Educational Leadership. Her primary research has been on job satisfaction of teachers in Krishna primary and secondary schools worldwide. She is certified as a Master Practitioner of Neuro-Linguistic Programming and Counseling and Teaching System. She is also a certified in the Prepare System of Premarital Counseling. Urmila Devi Dasi's service in ISKCON has included work as a book distributor, assistant secretary for BBT, pujari, tearful cook, actress, writer and editor. Her primary work has been in the area of education. She has spent a total of 5 years running and teaching in a preschool, mostly under the guidance of Jyotimai Devi Dasi. In 1982, in Detroit, she and her husband started a primary school which gradually grew to include secondary students. Her Grace became one of the academic and sadhana teachers. She soon became the principal of the school that they ran for 8 years. The family moved to North Carolina in late 1990. Her Grace then started another primary and secondary school where she worked as the principal and main teacher. In 1984, she worked on a history textbook with Drishta Das and soon afterwards finished writing and compiling Vaikuntha Children, a guidebook for education in ISKCON. Urmila Devi Dasi has helped start the Grihastha Vision team, which is coordinating courses and materials to strengthen marriage and the family in ISKCON, North America. She is also a member of the Shastric Advisory Council for GBC. For 10 years, she was a member of ISKCON's International Board of Education and for 7 years was Vice Chairman of the North American Board. Urmila Devi Dasi continues to develop and teach local, national and international seminars for trainers, educators and managers, which she has done for over 2 decades. She has developed and taught numerous courses for primary, secondary colleges and adult learners in a wide variety of spiritual and practical subjects. She is also a feature writer and associate editor for Back to Godhead magazine. She is currently writing and coordinating the development of Krishna Conscious Academic Curriculum.
Thank you, Pooja. Mataji, once again, Hare Krishna and welcome to the Hare Krishna Hour.
Hare Krishna.
Well, Mataji, as is customary on the show, could you please tell us a little bit about yourself before you joined ISKCON and how you were introduced to Krishna consciousness?
Well, I was born and raised in Manhattan in New York City. My family were very well known in the Jewish community. My father was the CEO of a kosher food company, Manischewitz Company. And I had a desire since at least the age of 4 to realize God and attain spirituality. When I was a youth, I studied in the Jewish Theological Seminary. When the rabbis there couldn't answer my questions, I started reading the New Testament. My first contact with Krishna consciousness came in 1967 when I would be listening to Srila Prabhupada's Happening album. I used to visit my older sister who lived on the Lower East Side, a couple blocks from 22nd Avenue. Unfortunately, I didn't meet Prabhupada at that time. And then I first visited a temple in 1969. I was particularly attracted by George Harrison's recording of the Brahma Samhita, which we play in our temples every morning. It's one of my favorite. It really moved me. And when I heard it on the radio, I said, what is that? That's what I want. Then later on, I visited temples, as I said, in 69, and then later on in 1972, I ended up getting a copy of Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, which really changed my life. I was at university at the time. Then in early 1973, I stayed for a couple weeks at the Chicago Temple while I was working. And that was when I decided this is what I want to do. I was particularly looking for a way where I could be in consciousness of God at every moment. I wasn't satisfied with religious systems where you were basically an ordinary person and then for a few hours a week or maybe a few minutes a day, you engaged in some sort of prayer and meditation and the rest of your life you were materialist.
Mataji, could you tell us about the first time you saw Srila Prabhupada? What were your feelings and what was it like? Could you describe that moment for us?
Oh, definitely. So that was in the summer of 1974. So at that time I was already initiated. I hadn't met Srila Prabhupada when I got initiated. He initiated me through the mail. And he came to the Chicago temple for the Rath Yatra. So the first time I saw Prabhupada was when he walked in the temple room for greeting the deities. Then he sat on the Vyasasana, and I don't believe we were doing Guru Puja then. We started doing Guru Puja in the summer of 74, but I don't think we had started at that point. So he sat on the Vyasasana to give Bhagavatam class. I was at that time 19. And I was standing, maybe half a meter from Srila Prabhupada on his left side, and I was fanning him with a peacock feather fan. My memory of it is that I fanned him for the whole class, although that's a long time to be fanning. But that's how I remember it. And Srila Prabhupada was talking about how everyone's a controller, but if you go to the controller of the controller of the controller, then you come to God. And he also talked about how we all want to see God, but we can't even see the soul. That when our father dies, we say, my father's gone, but the body is still there, so that means we never saw our father. And if we can't see the little piece of God, then how can we expect to see God? So my feelings at that time were that I experienced absolutely no difference, 100% the same experience, between standing a half a meter from Srila Prabhupada fanning him and listening to him speak there physically and listening to a recording of Srila Prabhupada. I felt that it was absolutely the same. There was no difference for me in the experience at all. So that was very pacifying because I realized that I had always been in Srila Prabhupada's association through sound, and that after he physically left, I would continue to be in his association through sound, and that I could be with him fully in that way, that he was fully present in that way. But it was also very disappointing because I had all these expectations, I'd say kind of vague expectations, that when Srila Prabhupada came, that something would be radically different, that I'd have a very different experience. So later on that morning, my father, my husband, and I got to meet with Srila Prabhupada in his quarters. And we entered while he was finishing a discussion with a reporter. There's a video of this. The reporter was asking Srila Prabhupada, why did you come in such a fancy car? And Prabhupada said, I knew you were envious. That's why I'm not sitting on my regular seat. He had moved off of his asana, and he was sitting on a little cushion in front of his table. And it's too bad I can't show this on the radio, but Srila Prabhupada was leaning back. He had kind of his left leg folded like you would in a cross-legged position, and his right knee was up, and his dhoti was kind of around his knees, so you could see his right calf and both of his feet, and he was leaning back against some cushions, sitting on a very low cushion in front of his table, and he had his left hand behind his head, and he was leaning back and smiling. It was a very relaxed, casual, very jovial mood. And he was, I would say, in a sense, sort of playing with this reporter, which I saw on other occasions, yes, probably dealing with reporters like that. Anyway, the reporter finished, and then my father was introduced to Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada immediately started, actually first Srila Prabhupada thought that my husband was my father's son. So it took a while for us to sort out that I was my father's daughter, and this was my father's daughter and son-in-law. And then Prabhupada started telling the story of Prahlad Maharaj and Hiranyakashipu, how devotee children can have demoniac parents, demoniac fathers. Basically, he was calling my father a demon. But my father very much appreciated it. He wasn't offended. Srila Prabhupada had a real gift for saying very heavy things and not offending people, which some people try to imitate unsuccessfully. And my father asked Srila Prabhupada, why are you so anxious to give everyone your food, even people? Because my father was in the food business. He ended up over the years asking Prabhupada a lot of questions about food. He said, why are you so anxious to give people your food even if they're not familiar with your philosophy? And again, if you can get this picture of Srila Prabhupada leaning back and just very casual. And he said to my father, do you believe in infection? So my father said, yes. He said, well, just like if you eat the food of a sick person, you'll get infected with their disease. So if you eat the food that Krishna's eaten, you'll get infected with Krishna's disease. So everybody was laughing. And then my father said, is it all right that I come to the temple even though I'm not coming to see Krishna? mean, actually, my father almost became a devotee quite some years later, but at this point he said, I'm not coming to see Krishna, I have my own religion. Is that all right that I come to the temple? And Prabhupada said, yes. So there can be many religions, just like we're in Chicago, and many planes are coming to Chicago, as long as they know they're coming to Chicago. He said, as long as you know that the goal is to know God and to love Him, then there can be many religions. I thought about that for a long time afterwards, because most religions don't have the goal of knowing God and loving God. They have a goal of going to heaven or salvation. And then my father said, well, really, I'm coming to the temple just to see my daughter and son-in-law. I'm not coming to see Krishna. Is that okay? Prabhupada paused for a minute, and then he had this big smile. He said, yes. He said, they are loving Krishna. And I was thinking, I don't love Krishna. He said, chanting and dancing are symptoms of loving Krishna. So they are loving Krishna, and you are loving them. So two things equal to the same thing are equal to each other. And when we walked out of the room, my father looked at me and he said, now I know why you've come to this movement. That was genuinely a holy man. And I was feeling that my desire to have some association with Srila Prabhupada as an individual was also fulfilled. So I got the two experiences. I got to experience that Srila Prabhupada is the acharya, is the guru, that he was totally present in his books and in his recordings, that I didn't require to have my physical body in the presence of his physical body to have his association at all, not at all. And then I also got that sweetness of having Srila Prabhupada's personal association and really getting to see him as an individual with his individual relationships, which I believe is also available in his physical absence. But I was able to get that sweetness. So those were my overall impressions.
Well, Mataji, you have been serving ISKCON for more than 40 years, and you have traveled extensively.
Actually, just about exactly 40 years.
40 years, yeah. All right.
February 73 to February 2013 is just 40 years.
And you are celebrating it in South Africa.
Yeah.
Mataji, this is your first time here. Could you tell us how does Krishna consciousness in South Africa compare to Krishna consciousness around the world? Are we on level?
It's a very interesting question. How does one answer that question? Well, one of the interesting things that Srila Prabhupada accomplished, one of his geniuses, one of the ways in which he was empowered, was to take the science of bhakti, which really up until then had been applied very individually. So you took the 64 angas of bhakti and you took the 8 main angas of bhakti, and under the direction of a guru. I mean, there are scriptural injunctions, how to worship the deity and so forth. But still, if you look at the history, you'll find that the guru would instruct each disciple in a somewhat different program of sadhana. In fact, Rupa Goswami talks about that, how the principle is surrendered to guru, but exactly the instructions the guru gives you, that's a detail. But what Srila Prabhupada did was he systematized the execution of the 9, or you could say the 64 angas of bhakti, and said, all right, everybody has Mangalarti, and 16 rounds minimum of japa, the 4 regular principles, which are the 4 means by which Kali Yuga enters when you break them. And he made something that, regardless of culture, and regardless of country, regardless of background, there was some sort of a uniform system. Of course, beyond that, we have our individual applications. But because Prabhupada did that, really, anywhere you go in the world that's ISKCON, you're going to find pretty much the same baseline flavor. It's just like you could have some manufacturer of ice cream, and there are many different flavors, but there's a certain baseline quality that you know if I buy XYZ brand, I'm going to get a certain baseline quality. So I see that pretty much, not absolutely perhaps, but pretty much wherever you go in the ISKCON world, you're going to find that baseline level of quality. I mean, unless somebody's really off, in which case the GBC has to come in and get them back in line. And what I also find is that each particular temple, which is the way Srila Prabhupada wanted it, Prabhupada wanted each temple to be independent, he didn't want centralization. So each particular temple has its own flavor. And I don't even think I can talk about South Africa. I think I'd have to talk about each temple in South Africa, because each one had its own flavor. You know, when I was in Bloemfontein, they're preaching mostly to the black Africans. and you see, you know, in the kirtans, there's the, just like what Prabhupada would describe, the blacks are dancing, the whites are dancing, the men are dancing, the women are dancing. I mean, it was everybody. It was blacks, British whites, Africans whites, Indians, old, young, parents, children, grandparents. So there was that kind of flavor. You know, here in Johannesburg, I'm seeing primarily the Indian congregation are coming. And it's, in Cape Town, I also saw a real mix of people. In some places, there's a big emphasis on deity worship, and the deity worship is gorgeous, and people really focus on the deities. And some, there's a real emphasis on book distribution. In Durban, I saw incredible emphasis on studying Srila Prabhupada's books. I mean, there were hundreds of devotees involved in Durban in programs to deeply study Srila Prabhupada's books. And so many people, children and adults, were getting certificates in various aspects of studying Srila Prabhupada's books, which I thought was just wonderful. All over South Africa, I'm seeing an emphasis on university preaching, which is something Srila Prabhupada very much wanted. And in festivals and ratiyatras and engaging the general public. So every place has its flavor, and you're not, I haven't found yet any place in the world where every single aspect of Krishna consciousness is equally emphasized to the nth degree. But I've seen that each place has its particular strengths, where, you know, in some places it's kirtan,
yes,
where there's almost continuous kirtan, and where the devotees are, you know, practically any time you go in the temple, there's a kirtan going on, and bhajan's going on. And so yeah, every place has its wonderfulness and its flavor. And I don't see that you can necessarily compare one place to another unless you're going to talk about the basic following. But everything's wonderful. Krishna's a variety man. He has so much infinite variety. And I see that, I'm not going to say every single one, but practically every single ISKCON center and ISKCON project and affiliates of ISKCON and things that ISKCON devotees are going out and doing is all part of Mahaprabhu's movement, and all has its place in Mahaprabhu's movement.
Mataji, during the past week you have been hosting several workshops and seminars. Could you please tell us a little bit about them?
What specifically?
Not specifically, generally.
Generally. Well, this past week we gave a seminar on how to transmit the culture of Krishna consciousness to the next generation. We were talking about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. We were looking at the value and the process by which we are changed by the people with whom we associate. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at various topics in Krishna consciousness.
Also, Mataji, you are involved with the Back to Godhead. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about your involvement there?
Well, I became an associate editor of Back to Godhead in 1990, and I think it was in 91, I believe, where I became the education columnist. So 8 or 9 years, I wrote a regular column on education. I'm still one of the feature writers. And I say that Back to Godhead, it's a means by which we both keep the essential principles of Krishna consciousness and relate the preaching to time, place, and circumstance, both of which has to go on if you're going to have a vibrant organization. Mm-hmm. You have to keep core principles, and we're going to be talking about this later this week at the temple. In fact, we're giving a seminar, I can't remember which day, in the evening, on preserving ISKCON. And one of the things we're going to be looking at is that both of these things have to go on simultaneously, keeping the core principles and adjusting the details for time, place, and circumstance. So Back to Godhead is a place where we constantly have every single issue a lecture or a book excerpt from Srila Prabhupada. Plus we have an excerpt, of course, from the Srimad Bhagavatam. But then we have articles by people now, by people who are on the earth now,
yes,
who are preaching Krishna consciousness now. What are their realizations? What are their accomplishments? What sort of projects are coming up? Taking Krishna consciousness and making it relevant to what people are doing in the world now. So it's Back to Godhead is one of the main places where you really see the dynamic nature of Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. And another wonderful aspect of Back to Godhead, of course, to some extent now this is being done on the internet. Mm-hmm. Formerly, before the internet, it was being done only by Back to Godhead. Mm-hmm. And now Back to Godhead has some stiff competition. But Back to Godhead is one of the forums where we really come together as an international community. Mm-hmm. When you're part of just your local temple, your local community, you should be wrapped up in your local concerns. But it's also nice to interact with the international community. Mm-hmm. As we say, act locally and think globally, right? Mm-hmm. So Back to God, it is a place where you can connect what you're doing locally, what you're doing nationally, to the international community of devotees and feel part of the greater extended family. Mm-hmm. And we invite people, of course, to write for Back to Godhead, and you can find in Back to Godhead, you can also hear the voices of people on many different levels, people just starting their Krishna consciousness, people who've been practicing Krishna consciousness for decades, mm-hmm. men, women, married people, renunciates, even youth. So it's a place where we really come together as a community, and there's not very many other places like that in the world. And it's a place we come together as a community. At the same time, we have our editorial board to ensure that everything that goes into Back to God, it is perfectly according to the Siddhanta. So you may find many places on the internet where you hear international voices, but none of those places have the kind of editorial review that we have in Back to Godhead. So you may be exposed just on the internet to all sorts of things. Where with Back to Godhead, you know what you're getting is bona fide, and at the same time you're hearing a variety of voices and you're part of the international community.
You are listening to the Hare Krishna Hour on 93.6 Lens FM, and with me in the studio this morning as our special guest, Her Grace Srimati Urmila Devi Dasi. When we get back, it's just two more questions and then we'll be done. The first question I would ask you is about, well, I'll speak about your doctorate of education in educational leadership, and that you are assisting the Hare Krishna primary and secondary schools throughout the world. So could you please tell us a little bit about that and how these schools are different from regular schools? You know, so that maybe someone listening would be willing to sponsor us so that we could open a school here. South Africa.
And your other question?
The other question is, okay. I lost your screen. Thank you. Second question is, well, it will be the ending. So we'd say, Mataji, we've come to the end of our interview, and as a final message to our listeners, what would you like to say? So it will be from your heart.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna and welcome back. You are listening to the Hare Krishna Hour on 93.6 Lens FM, and with me in the studio this morning as our special guest, Her Grace Srimati Urmila Devi Dasi. Hare Krishna Mataji, and once again welcome back. Mataji, you have a Doctorate of Education in Educational Leadership. You are currently assisting the Hare Krishna primary and secondary schools throughout the world. Could you please tell us a little bit about that and how these schools are different from our normal and regular schools?
What's the point of education if the only thing that you learn how to do is to be a sophisticated animal? Mm-hmm. The animals eat, sleep, mate, and defend. So if you just learn how to eat fancy and sleep fancy and defend fancy and mate fancy, what is the point? Mm-hmm. A human being is more than just a lump of flesh and with some hairs on it, and, you know. Yeah. We're a soul. Spiritual education unites the soul with Krishna. So I've been very involved at this point, since I resigned from being a school principal and a full-time teacher, with creating curriculum materials. So we have our Learn to Read program, which is available from illuminationeducation.com, by which children can learn to read while being absorbed in the transcendence, while being absorbed in the world of the spirit. They can get full academic education and be competent people in the world, and at the same time fall in love with Krishna. So that's what we want. And without those sort of school systems, what is the use of our life? Childhood is the most impressionable period when the human being is moldable. If we think about it, you know, what other species has such a long childhood? So it should be used for spiritual education and spiritual advancement of life.
Mataji, we've come to the end of the interview. Is there some final message that you would like to give to our listeners?
Fall in love with Krishna. If you fall in love with Krishna, your life will be perfect. And without that, you'll never be satisfied. Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure. He's an unlimited ocean of pleasure and adventure and excitement and variety and love and individual personality. Fall in love with Krishna. Otherwise, what is the use of our short spotlight on this earth?
Mataji, it's really been an honor and privilege to have a devotee of your caliber on the show. Hare Krishna, and thank you so much for taking this opportunity to be with us. Well, listeners, if you would like to meet the great Srimati Urmila Devi Dasi,